is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Shortly after President Biden authorized it, Ukraine fired 8 longer-range U.S.-supplied missiles a little deeper into Russia. Putin responded by easing the conditions that would invite a nuclear response by Russia. At the Pentagon, spokeswoman Sabrina Singh.
What we are doing is, as we have been from the very beginning, is ensuring that Ukraine has what it needs. So you're going to see us continue to support Ukraine with different presidential drawdown packages that are going to support its short-term and long-term needs.
Moscow says it shot down 2 of the 8 missiles the Ukrainians fired. Celebrity physician Mehmet Oz may serve in the Trump administration, the president-elect tapping Oz to run the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services. The National Police of Haiti announced that 28 gang members were killed in a special police operation in Port-au-Prince, with residents brandishing machetes and knives taking part in the killing. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks beat the Rockets. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks pulled out a 101-100 win over the Rockets last night in Milwaukee. It snapped a 5-game winning streak for Houston. Damian Lillard with the winning shot. Doc Rivers says Lillard reminds him of Ray Allen.
Well, Dame just has great courage. You know, reminds me a lot of Ray Allen in that way. Ray didn't have a lot of bad shooting nights, but when he had one, if you had one shot to make, you still wanted to go to him. And that's how you feel about Dame.
The Bucks host the Chicago Bulls tomorrow night. Men's college basketball, number 19th-ranked Badgers, held on to win over Texas Rio Grande Valley, 87-84. Wisconsin remains undefeated at 5-0. College football, the Badgers head to Lincoln to play Nebraska this Saturday at 2:30. Luke Fickell on his decision to fire offensive coordinator Phil Longo.
Just so you know, on Sunday, I had made a decision to what we needed to do, and then came in, obviously had a conversation with Phil, and pretty much decided that we needed to do it now.
That's the Badgers' Luke Fickell with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Matt Nair on air.
And we are here with Matt Randolph, Mr. Global. Donald Trump now will be coming in for a second term. There has been talk of removing sanctions from Russia. What would that mean, Matt, for the oil and gas industry?
So it depends on what Russia does, but we've seen nothing to suggest that they want to have anything to do with lowering oil prices.
And so the prices are essentially going to stay the same?
In all likelihood, yes.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about, lots of conversation about how fast Donald Trump is appointing his cabinet, getting his team in place, how fast the nominations are coming, fast and furious. In fact, you know, the last I saw was, 12 in a couple of days. 8 days after the election, they made 12 appointments, which if you go back, evidently, to get to that level, President Obama and President Biden took almost 40 days to get to that point. George W. Bush took over 50 days. Some of that had to do with the Bush v. Gore litigation. But they're tripping over themselves saying, look how fast, look how efficient. He's learned. He's going to be presidential. Oh, he learned from the last time. No. This is Project 2025 in action. This is the fact that the machine, the right-wing machine, got behind him. The last time, 2016, they didn't want him, and they didn't think he had a chance, so they didn't produce a giant document 900 pages long to talk about all of the bad ideas that they wanted to put into law. They didn't pay people, you know, millions and millions of dollars to come up with bad ideas on how to destroy every agency of government. They didn't have their wet dream list. They got it now. And they've got it in a big way. So the fact that you now have a Trump that gets, you know, how to play the game a little bit, and a motivated moneyed class and a motivated disinformation machine, some dangerous things are going to happen. And the question that I keep asking, will we get a media, because we keep looking for our media to be our savior, it's not going to be, but we keep asking, will we see true investigatory journalism? Will we see the vetting of candidates for these positions in, you know, by our media in a way that does them justice? Or will we see kind of a brushing under the rug to keep access, to stay in good favor, to keep relationships? Because, hey, you know, 4 years is going to be a long time to be out in the cold, because this administration will punish you for being disloyal. This is where we're at. This is what authoritarianism looks like. This is what a fascistic government looks like. This is the takeover by corporate CEOs of government. This is that melding of private interests and government interests into the hands of the CEO class. And that's what we've got here, folks. The question is will we pay attention? Now, the hope is look, we've signed on. We are in this through this nightmare. Here at the program, we have made the commitment. We are staying. Because I've had a bunch of people go, what are you going to do, Rick? Well, he's promised to retribution. He's promised to go after his enemies. He's promised, you know, people like you to maybe disappear. Well, if you don't see us, if we're gone one day, you know where we went. Someone came and snatched us up, because we are here for this term. We will be here to spread light on the horrible that's going to happen. You've heard me say the solutions will be in the savagery. The things that they are going to do, because corporate America now has all the power. The things that they are going to do to cause great suffering, we will be focusing on. The attacks to workers through a Department of Labor that will be weaponized against workers, we will be focused on. A healthcare system that will be weaponized because Health and Human Services is now, well, and going to potentially be in the hands of a kook, we will pay attention to. In every way that we can, on working class issues, we will focus on what this administration is doing. Because ultimately, there's going to be chaos. There's going to be the distraction, the diversion. There's going to be the shiny thing. Matt Gaetz for Attorney General. There's going to be the, hey, look over there, while the CEOs do what they want. And that is to create an environment that is even more business friendly than we are now, to create a tax code that benefits them even more, that creates a regulatory regime that benefits them even more, that creates labor policy that benefits them. Understand, there is right now, as we speak, an attack on the National Labor Relations Act. I guarantee you, our Supreme Court will rule in a way that any changes harm workers, but they keep the parts that benefit employers. Because that's what they want. They want to show that government is ineffective. They want to show that government has no power. They want to show that government is broken. And they're breaking it. And they're going to tell you, we have to break it if we want to save it. If you want a government, we've got to destroy all this. We got to fire everyone. We got to undo all of this. And we'll remake it in the image of the 80s and 90s. The 1880s and 90s. And that may be great, depending on which side of the horrible you're on, which side of the suffering, which side of the savagery. And that age-old question will return to us. Which side are we on? Who will we stand and fight for? Will it be our neighbor? Will it be our brother, our sister, a relative, or ourselves? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Are you ready? You ready to see what's coming? Regardless, it's coming. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I come back to this Axios story that you know, Trump's on a record pace for cabinet picks. Talking about his fracking executive that he's going to make the head of the Department of Energy. Surprise, surprise. But nowhere in the article, and this is the part that gets me, nowhere in the article do they mention Project 2025 as... I think they should. I think that should be part of it, because this, for all my red hats who said, oh, that's not Trump, you know, Project 2025 isn't him, it's somebody else. They've been doing this. They've been gaming this for a year. They've got all their policies. They got everything lined up. But here to share some thoughts on my big question, whether we're going to have some investigatory journalism, going to look into these I don't even want to call them nominations, but these crackpots and these criminals, or are they just going to let them slide through, you know, for access to Trumpapalooza? I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how the heck are you?
So this is my question. You know, are we going to get honest, you know, dig down deep, find the, not just the salacious dirt, but the actual reality of, you know, these people are CEOs and big rich people with an agenda that doesn't match you and me? Or are we going to get, hey, we're just going to, we got the press release, we're going to report that because we want to be invited back?
That's an excellent question. I think that already you're starting to see some of the information that the Trump campaign didn't know about. I mean, I wrote a story on Friday about Pete Hegseth and the campaign being completely blindsided by the fact that he had an incident in California where somebody alleged that he sexually assaulted them. And he's been trying to clean it up all weekend. And what his lawyer basically said is, you know, this is a weird sort of thing that just happened. There were no charges filed. You know, there's nothing major that happened here. There's not going to be any other surprises that pop up. And then you find out that a member of the National Guard flagged him as a possible inside threat whenever they were there on Washington, basically guarding Washington on January 6th. So, that happened less than 24 hours later. It was just like the lawyer said, there's not going to be anything else. And then boom,
yeah,
there was something else. So I think what we found out is that the Trump people are paying for their own vetting for some corporation, which I'm sure is, you know, headed by a bestie or something, instead of using the FBI. And the claim that they made was that if you have a private company do it for you, it takes a heck of a lot less time. Gee, I wonder why.
But here's the thing, and right? This is where if you're Hegseth, don't you throw that out there knowing that somebody's going to find it? Look, and this is where I don't buy that they didn't know. This is something I don't think is important to Trump because, look, you know, Trump himself, same scenario. The porn star claims they had sex. There was a $130,000 payment. Whether he did or he didn't, I'm not going to say he did or he didn't because I don't care. He paid $130,000. This guy's saying he paid somebody, but it was consensual. It was a married woman, oddly enough, Mr. Family Values. There's just so much here that if you're this guy and you know you've got to go through a confirmation process, you're out in the fishbowl that the media is going to be looking for anything to tear you down, you have to disclose this. So I ain't buying it that they didn't know. I think they this circus.
It wouldn't surprise me if the campaign didn't know. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe like Trump knew, but everybody else in the campaign or in the transition team was completely blindsided by it. That makes sense to me. I think I understand what you mean about this idea of everybody planning for these people ahead of time. I think, honest to God, this is something where Trump is just saying, okay, what do you guys want? Right, to all of his besties, yeah, to all of the loyalists and whatever. He's just saying, what do you want? Okay, you can have it.
But Matt Gaetz?
Beyond that, beyond those people, then it's the people from, you know, maybe from Project 2025.
I get the Fox News guy, the third stringer on the weekends at Fox News. I kind of get that in a certain level. You know, Trump saw him on TV, you know, whatever. But Matt Gaetz?
Central casting. He looks like a DOD person.
Yeah, but Matt Gaetz? Right? I mean, again, a problem with the sexual past, a problem with, you know, actually minors potentially. There seems to be a theme here, Sarah, that just seems to be a theme here.
It does seem an awful lot like the folks that were, you know, trying to claim that, you know, we should have some sort of safety from sexual predators are being investigated as sexual predators. In the case of Matt Gaetz, he was absolved from, you know, the Justice Department said that they weren't going to file charges after their investigation. Now, the Ethics Committee, from what we've heard from reporting, is that one witness testified that she saw him have sex with a minor, and then another one testified that she, as a minor, had sex with him. So, again, like...
And that's the guy we want at the head of the Department of Justice.
Right. But again, like this is Trump's bestie who has been with him no matter what. He fought McCarthy whenever Trump wanted him to. He has done literally every single thing that Trump has wanted him to do. And the teabaggers, he's done whatever they want, right? So, you know, I think that with his anger toward the Justice Department for his own investigation, it just seems to match with what, you know, his ideology and Trump's. And so it makes a lot of sense. It's never going to happen. I really don't think he'll get confirmed unless they do a recess appointment. And even then, I don't know that is going to go over very well.
Yeah. My problem is it just plays into what my narrative has been. It's about the sideshow. It's about the circus. While all of the destruction is going on, it's about making things appear that they don't function. It really is about causing chaos just for chaos sake. So while they're privatizing and profitizing all the aspects of our government, we're watching the circus.
At the same time, it is a consistent dumbing down of America where you have people, it's like going to somebody for brain surgery where all they've done is play Operation.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what this is.
And they're not good at that either.
Right. And it's embracing this idea of a lack of experience, and it's belittling people with legitimate experience. And our government has never experienced something like that before. We've never had people heading departments or in departments who are there for ideological reasons rather than, you know, people who know what they're actually doing. And so it may be the downfall of, you know, each department or in the American government, and maybe that's what they want. Or all of these people end up screwing up so much that they end up indicted after this administration is over.
You go, okay, but what's that mean for the rest of us? You know, I saw one of the analysts talking about this, Hegseth, saying that he's just qualified enough to ruin the Pentagon. And you go, that, again, plays into what I've been saying. This is the point. The point is you put the most radical, the most hate people who hate the organization the most and want to restrain and destroy it in charge of it. And then, because, hey, we've got to destroy it to save it. Because there is that mentality, it just kind of makes me go, this is what we can expect from now until at least the next 2 years.
See, I don't think that he's smart enough to take it down, in large part because I think, and the problem he will face is you will have, you know, the generals with the stars. And they're going to be the ones who are just like, that's illegal, that's illegal, that's illegal. And so that's where they start talking about firing the generals and building this board of people who will decide whether or not these generals stay. And so I think what would be, for a little bit at least, there's going to be somebody who stands up to him. Because a lot of the, you know, unlike there are other departments where everybody's a civil servant who's just like, you know what? I'm out, or I'm taking early retirement, or, you know, I'm going to go work in the private sector or whatever.
So again, this
but
is where
military people, it's a whole other deal.
Right. But this is where I come back to Project 2025 and the whole Schedule F thing.
Right.
Because if you remember at the beginning, when we first started talking about Project 2025, it was about having a ready to go army of loyalists and sycophants who would fill those civil servant positions when he goes in and he fires everybody using Schedule F, that will then do the marching that they weren't able to do the last time. That's kind of frightening. But again, you brought up the general thing. I do think you're going to see a number of generals brought up on some kind of charges so they can start ousting people to see if they can scare people in the line.
And I wonder how much that's really going to work, or how. Because again, like, that is just a publicity nightmare. You know, we've spent so many decades embracing the military and talking about whether it's people who were criticized for protesting Vietnam all the way through the Iraq War. Like, you know, we have been this yellow ribbon society for my entire life.
Right.
And so the idea of destroying a general because they took an oath to the Constitution, I just think it's a bad look.
Yeah, but they're not going to frame it that way, Sarah. They're going to frame it as the first. What's the first thing they brought out? The withdrawal from Afghanistan. They're going to say these are bad generals. Look at what they did, and they're going to discredit them by using some, well, literally trumped up situation. And that's how they're going to begin the process, because you're going to get people, well, maybe, you know, they did screw up, and, you know, he's the you're fired guy. I can see people falling for it.
I can see people falling for it. But again, the question is, do you follow the commander in chief and the Constitution or not? You know, like, that is the question over and over again. If you're saying that you must follow the commander in chief, but you're kicking them out for following the commander in chief, it just doesn't, I don't know that it works.
Yeah.
My fear is that, again, like you were saying, there, the circus is going to distract over here while legitimate stuff is happening here. And at the same time, the thing that we have found out about this election is just how much people don't know and don't understand about things like authoritarianism and tariffs. Like, all of these people who were searching on the day of the election, like, what is a tariff? They did a focus group of Trump voters who were talking about, you know, democracy and whatever, and they made some comment about, you know, authoritarianism, and the first question that was asked is, what is authoritarianism? So again, like, this is the dumbing down of society, where, you know, they wanted to destroy the Department of Education, and they want to put all of these people in charge who are not experts, because they're making it look like you can be somebody who's just on Fox News and doesn't know anything, but because you look good, you can lead a department.
And now you're leading the most powerful military in the history of humanity.
Right.
No, perfectly rational kind of way of thinking. But, you know, this, again, to your point, what I find interesting is, you know, the Democrats didn't do a very good job of filling that void, because there is nothing to combat the right-wing propaganda in this country, really. There's nothing equally powerful to Fox News or the right-wing talk empire, or even, you know, the TikTok and the social media dominance that the right has put out. So, you know, how do you then pull back from all of the mis and disinformation that's out there, given the fact that, you know, we're heading towards, you know, I have people saying a fascistic regime.
Or just a downright lack of education. I think I looked it up and it was like 9 states in the country. 9 states require that there be some kind of civics or U.S. government class for kids in school. So nobody knows what a fascist is. Nobody knows what authoritarian is. No one knows what a tariff is. So, I mean, there is a part of me that very much wants there to be some kind of nonpartisan nonprofit that is just an education source. It's like, okay. Yeah.
You're like your local public school.
Right. Like your public school, like PBS, like something that is just forcing information on people where it's like, hey, you want to know what a tariff is? Here's the Schoolhouse Rock version of the tariff, right?
We'll dig those guys up. No, because the weird thing is, you're right. No one knows what the tariff is, because, you know, I've been hit, because I'm not against tariffs. If used strategically as part of an overall plan, you know, I'm not against them. I think they can be useful in targeted areas, especially when you're talking about national security and domestic productivity and all of that stuff. But broad blanket tariffs, not great, not good. So on both sides, you know, I've got people on the right who, because Trump wants them, they were all on board. And on the left, since Trump wants them, they're against them with absolutes. I'm somewhere in that middle ground. I say we use them where we need to protect domestic productivity where we need it, and not where we don't. But you can't have a nuanced discussion in today's world, it seems.
That's, again, one of the problems with the partisan dumbing down of America, where it's just, again, we're so siloed and so rah at each other all the time.
No, you're right. Last question I gotta get from you. Doge. dog with an E, or Doge.
Right.
The Department of Government Efficiency, with two guys running it and no real power. But there's an office now. There's another government office and Musk's, I guess what Musk says he wants to accomplish is a 30% reduction in federal spending, or pulling about $2 trillion out of the economy. I got to tell you, sounds insane to me.
Well, here's the thing. If they're going to get rid of all of these generals and basically bring down the military, that's a heck of a lot of cash right there. We're talking like $860 billion that we spend on the U.S. military. And so maybe that's where it is. My favorite part of this story is that Elon Musk went into this deciding he's going to run all of this stuff and he's going to cut, you know, wasteful spending. And he finds out that the most expensive thing on that list is the interest that we're paying on the debt. And so it's like, what are you going to do, Elon? Or you can't just like call up the credit card company and be like, yeah, I need you to drop my interest rate, right? Like, yeah.
And not to mention, the other part of this, Sarah, is, you know, U.S. citizens own a large portion of that debt. Retirement systems own a large portion of that as well. It's kind of what helps our economy go in a certain way.
Yeah. And so you're talking about somebody who isn't an economist. Again, he has no idea what the heck he's talking about. The guy can't even handle running Twitter. He had rockets exploding like crazy every couple of weeks. So, like, again, like, I just don't see how this guy is supposed to be some sort of genius, and yet I don't know how he fixes anything, because, again, like, we have some of the smartest people in the world and they haven't fixed it yet.
Yeah.
So I don't get it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Look, I do think there are some areas that we could spend dollars a lot smarter. But this idea that we're just going to pull $2 trillion out of the economy, that will send us spiraling into an absolute depression. And all of the red hats who are screaming, yeah, cut funding, they're going to be the first ones to scream, holler, cry, and whine.
Yeah, we need to get those. You've seen the stickers all over the country with the Biden pointing, thing with the cash. I've seen some people who bought new Trump stickers like that. It's just, take a picture of the receipt, your grocery receipt from this weekend now, or over, Thanksgiving. Take that picture and come back to it in a year and let's see what it looks like and what the difference is.
Looking forward to my dollar gas and 99 cent eggs. Can't wait. Right? January 21st. But Sarah, I appreciate the time as always. Good stuff.
Thank you. Have an awesome week.
You as well. Our good friend, Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy and chilly tonight with lows in the mid-30s. Cold tomorrow with a cloudy sky, breezy, and even some flurries and snow showers. A high right around 40. Breezy with more snow showers Wednesday night and a rain snow mix for Thursday. It's 46 right now.
The Todd Alba Show.
Managing editor of E-Bombs World, Mr. Peter Rapine.
Google this week released a new product, the new AI overview. If you Google search, can I use gasoline to cook spaghetti? Google says, no, you can't use it to cook spaghetti, but you can use gasoline to make spicy spaghetti dishes.
Not recommended. Do not do that.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I didn't get to this on Monday, but the big Netflix fight, the Mike Tyson Jake Paul fight, I think everyone over 35 was pulling for Tyson. I think everyone, me included, wanted to see the old guy put that loudmouth kid on his behind. Didn't happen. In fact, it was kind of anticlimactic. In fact, there was the one part in the locker room when Tyson's kid was interviewing that I don't know why the cameraman was stuck on Tyson's behind. I don't think it's something the nation wanted to see. But I think that kind of was... kind of was the fight. But here to share some thoughts on that and, well, what's going on around the world, I've asked my good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So did you watch the big to-do?
Yeah, and I saw the walk away. He so slowly just walked away with the space there on the behind, the missing parts of the shorts, and it was like, okay, that's Tyson. By the way, I had breakfast in the Senate dining room with Holyfield years ago, right? And when we went there, we're sort of looking, and he's like, you want to see the ear? So, and he actually talked about that at the breakfast, but I was for Tyson. I was rooting for Tyson. Now, the two ladies that boxed,
Oh wow.
There was the fight. That was worth watching. That was amazing. But I'm not going to say fixed, and I'm not going to say WWE, but I just kind of get this feeling of a understanding. It went 8 rounds, 2 minutes. The boxing gloves were bigger. He bowed to Tyson. I'm not sure either one. One got $40 million. Tyson got $20 million. I'm not sure that either one had the understanding. If I get the punch out, I'm going to take it. I don't know. Yeah. That's me.
No, look, I look at it as there were a couple of times during the fight, as someone who has seen every Tyson fight at one point or another, that I thought there was the classic opportunity for Tyson to hit him with an uppercut, and he didn't throw any uppercuts that I could see. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at some of the videos that came out before the fight of him sparring and training. Those aren't the same guys. I don't know how sick he was. There's talk about how sick he was and if he got, you know, transfusions or what. But clearly not the same guy that I saw in the in the training videos. Clearly someone who was wobbly just walking in, let alone, you know, boxing for eight rounds. But here's the thing. Yeah. It's a 58-year-old guy who got into the ring. I give him credit.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is the year of the upsets. So I thought Tyson was going to pull it off.
Yeah, I was hoping. Look, like I said, I think anybody over 35 was pulling for him because, you know, we're getting to that age where we're not quite what we used to be. So it would be nice to see one of the old timers, you know, put one out. Now, from the Jake Paul part, I thought he fought the fight he had to because, you know, he boxed. He stayed away from him. He made Tyson chase him. Right. He basically wore him out and just didn't have the power to put him out. So, you know. It is what it is.
Got 40 million, one got 20 million. It's okay.
And this is what I said from the start. No matter what happens, this is about the money. This is a spectacle. It's not a boxing match. This is entertainment. This isn't really a grudge match. They tried to make it that, but ultimately, we all knew what the game was. You got a YouTube entertainer. You got someone who's, hey, look at me, who figured out how to get all of us to look at him. And we did.
Right. We did. Absolutely.
That simple. But, you know, I would have liked to have seen it to be a little more. The two Mexican fighters before the women were really good, too. And you know, to me, had it been just those two fights, it would have been an evening well spent, in my view.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I'm a big fan of boxing. We used to hold, get-togethers and have the whole neighborhood come and watch, you know, back in the old days when we had, before we had kids. But yeah, I'm a big boxing fan. I love the sweet sport. Let's move along. China. It looks like President Xi's doing a diplomatic tour through South America. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
I had a call today from a very educated anthropologist. She's been a longtime friend. And she was going down the path of China's military aggression, et cetera. And I said, well, let's stop for a second. It's not about China's military aggression. It may be about Putin's military aggression, all right? But not China. China is. It's down there. They're doing this opening of this port, you know, in South America. But also, if we look at BRIC originally, now it's BRICS. And most people are like, well, what's that? Well, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and now South Africa, and 14 other some countries are trying to get into it, including the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, Iran, etc. Now, BRICS was formed. Now, this is really interesting. BRICS was formed as a development entity. Then it took on a life in the last year or so that, well, maybe they'll follow their own currency, which means you don't use, guess what, the U.S. greenback for a lot of development projects. And then guess who just stepped in the last month and said, well, we're going to put that on hold. Vladimir Putin. Putin did. You think he's sending a signal to the United States for a deal?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
But China is, it's not firing a weapon. It's using its economic development clout. Now, part of the problem we have as a country, the United States, is that we love to sanction. You know, we've sanctioned some of these countries, everything except the air they breathe. It's really not done a good job, has it, in Cuba, of ridding them of the Castro family. So we've taken that diplomatic route. China is taking the route of let's build for you here. Let's do an opening. Have us down at the port thanking China in the other end of the planet. So China's pretty smart. They are pretty smart about how they're handling diplomacy and money.
Well, they're doing what we did after World War II.
Yes.
They went in and, you know, they said, you know, hey, you know, cool it with your wars. You know, George Carlin does a big, great bit on this. You know, stop with your wars. We'll whip a little industry on them because the middle two letters in the word industry are U.S. And we gave them the economic activity. We built roads. We built bridges. We gave them humanitarian aid, made them want to stay home so we didn't have an immigration problem. We used to understand that. We have seemed to have forgotten here over the last, you know, 10, 15 years. And look, I think we're going to continue to make the same mistakes because I don't think the Trump administration is going to reach out to the international community. And I think China is going to fill that void.
They will. You know, I met with the late Helmut Kohl, the Chancellor of Germany, years back. And Rick, he told the most emotional, compelling story of how he started to date his wife. The shoes he wore were as a result of the Marshall Plan, the United States. I mean, he gave this whole story about how we came in and we helped people. And it was a remembrance that, you know, they have people, especially and particularly Helmut Kohl's age. And then they were talking about a Marshall Plan for parts of the Arab world, you know, for some underserved areas in Africa. And when you start to think about that, China is sort of doing that. I mean, they've done it even with the Iranians. China has not been backward about what it's trying to do and use that type of diplomacy to really ingratiate itself with a lot of areas of the world.
And also, look, at the end of the day, be able to manufacture things and sell into their markets and control their markets, much like we used to do. And somehow, for some reason, and I think I have an idea why, we gave that up. And I would argue it's our billionaire class who wants more for themselves and less for literally everyone else. We used to tax the rich at a very high rate and use it for things like the Marshall Plan, things like building our own infrastructure. We just seem to stop doing it. You know, sometime I would argue around the Reagan years when we were saying, here, rich people, here's more.
Well, inflation, our recent inflationary cycle showed that because you know, I was flipping houses. I personally stopped because of the inflationary prices. And I couldn't predict the budget anymore of the houses. You know, it was like Russian roulette. But I would notice prices. I would go in, well, COVID. Oh, COVID caused this. And then all of a sudden you see that the supply chain's moving. And then you look at the prices and you're like, well, wait a minute, that didn't adjust, you know,
it went
up. And then you look, well, how much profit did they make? I'm all for profit, but how much do they need to make? Does any of it for goodwill come back so that then people, you know, develop more, work more, do more flips, hire more people, more drywallers, more electricians, et cetera. And not just the flipping industry, but any type of industry, and the prices just kept going up, and it's an internal gouging by corporate America.
And this is one of the mistakes I think the Biden administration made right from the start. It's one of the things I talked about right from the start when inflation became the issue. I was like, where's the Truman type commission to look into corporate gouging? Pull some of these CEOs who on their earnings calls are bragging about the enormous profits and the enormous stock buybacks that they're doing. I think they did a very poor job on that messaging front. And also, look, the reality is they didn't have the messaging vehicles to get that message out, even if they had one.
Well, you're 1,000% right. And do you know what they have today that Truman didn't have? Computers.
Yeah.
They can find out. We bought this board for this price. We moved it for this price. We took it in the store and we sold it for this price. A year after COVID stopped, we still sold it for this price. Computers, this is now easy to find out.
Yeah, you didn't have to do much legwork. It's in their reporting. You listen to their earnings calls. You know, it's the whole reason that gas is so high. They've got leases. They're just not using them because they're happy with where the price of gas is right now. But I got to get some of your thoughts. I can change topics. We've been seeing a lot of appointments, nominations for different cabinet positions. Trump evidently at record pace to fill a cabinet. I'm curious so far, What do you what's your thinking as someone who's been part of this stuff, who's been an insider? What are you seeing?
A couple of things. When I do magic tricks for my grandkids, you know, Rick, I have a dime in this hand and I have them watch this hand, sure. Right? The dime goes, vanishes. Well, that's the dime trick. It's called Matt Gaetz. That's the dime trick. I'm going to say this. It's sort of a genius move, I think, by Susie Wiles, the new chief of staff, because Gaetz is going to be what people really foam at the mouth at. Yeah, RFK Jr. somewhat, but they're going to look at Gaetz and after Gaetz and what happens to Gaetz. And if Gaetz vanishes in the appointment process, okay, there, we downed one. We didn't allow one to happen. And the rest kind of move on. Now, whoever can't move through the normal process, and I know this because of someone who couldn't get through the appointment process, and she was after me, and they were doing a recess appointment with her. They wanted to get her through the process because she was being targeted because her name was Alice Fisher. She didn't do anything to help with the Abramoff investigation. She now helped Monsanto clear itself, by the way. So that's one of those recess appointments. Now, at some points in time in our government, other presidents, Democrat, Republican, have had these recess appointments. But the way you hear this administration talking is sort of like they're all going to go through a recess appointment. Now, recess appointment doesn't give them full authority, but it can get them placed in the semi position, basically, and then they can still, for the most part, run things. But of course, eventually they then will move into an official appointment process.
Right.
Recess appointments in the recent years, the Senate has not warmed up to those. Now, if Trump wants certain recess appointments, I think he's going to get it. He is, as you can see, at a fast pace filling this cabinet. I got to give him credit. Boom, boom, boom. Whether they're the best or the brightest or, you know, in between or the worst, they're moving. And the Senate will also capitulate to move fast, too, whichever way Trump wants to do it. He's got this, again, honeymoon effect. And then you throw in the smokescreen of Gaetz and the Senate R's and the president, for the most part, will be happy. Also, the Senate can lose a couple of Republicans who will, for tight margins in their state or whatever, may go against what the White House wants.
Yeah, but, you know, the Republicans control the Senate. There should be no recess appointment, no need for it.
Exactly.
But for me, and I think you hit on, you kind of hit on where my thinking is, it really is about the circus. We need that distraction to go, hey, stupids, over here, while they fill all the rest of the cabinet positions with CEOs and rich people and people who want to destroy the organizations that they're a part of. And we don't focus on them. We focus on the shiny stuff, on the Gaetzes, sure, and on the RFKs and that, while the really dangerous people slide right on through.
Sure. All kinds of appointments, FCC, you know, councils, trade, everything.
Yeah. And look, the idea that he's doing it quickly, there's an entire right wing machine, the whole cesspool of right wing think tanks that's been, they've been plotting for this. They wrote a whole 900 and some page book on it, that they're ready to go day one. They're going to hit the ground running with a lot of bad ideas.
Well, the Susie Wiles appointment is really it's a good one for Trump because, you know, the last time when he won in 2016, I was asked about, you know, the running of the trains, as I call it. You know, the cabinet has to function, run the trains, run the agencies. And I said, well, it's not going to be a problem because he's got Pence. Pence, a former member of the House, former governor. Pence knows the D.C. structure, right? And then, of course, Pence didn't even have any entree to go into the Oval Office. And it was helter-skelter and people quitting, people being fired, et cetera. I think with Susie Wiles, I don't think you're going to see that. She has some ability, I'm not saying to control Trump. She'll let Trump be Trump. But I do think on certain things, he listens to her. And I think she's a big force about putting this together, moving it rapidly. It is moving like a high-speed rail.
Yeah, she's the person Ivanka couldn't be.
Exactly. Well, and Ivanka and Jared are not coming back into the administration in official capacity anyway, which is a smart move for the two of them.
Very smart move, because I think there's going to be a lot of chaos, and it should be interesting to watch. But what do you think of someone like RFK in charge of the health department?
Well, if you Google my name and his, you will see a wonderful conspiracy theory that I helped fix the elections for Bush, not only in Ohio. Steny Hoyer, the number two Democrat, he and I across the country, by the Help America Vote Act, we fixed the election. Well, if I did, then I've either got a great big Swiss bank account, or I wouldn't have spent a few years in Morgantown Federal Correction, one of the two. I'll tell you that much. So he's a conspiracy theorist. I've been part of his conspiracy theories, anti-vax, et cetera. I don't know how it's all going to turn out, but the commitment that everybody said Trump would go back on, he didn't. He made him head of HHS. There's going to be some controversy, especially when it comes to vaccines. So we'll see, but he will be controversial. But I must say, I thought Trump would not hold to the promise to give him a cabinet slot, and he did.
No, I tweeted out, several days ago that, I think RFK is a kook, and I think, Trump is, he's going to be the first one Trump throws under the bus. I'm wrong, and I stand. I admit it. I thought for sure that he would go, nope, you're a little kooky. You got to go. But again, back to the it's about the chaos. His confirmation hearing, if there will be one. Let me ask you that. Do you think that RFK, do you think Gates, do you think some of the more controversial ones, do you think they get a hearing?
I've got to believe that Gates stops before a hearing. I just have to believe that Thune at some point in time, the new head of the Senate, calls the president and says, here's the numbers that I count. And then the White House has to proceed on, expend capital, or call it a day.
Yeah.
So, of course, Gates walks away free because the House doesn't expel him, which is, I'm convinced, was going to happen. Now, somebody yelled at me the other day on radio down south and said, well, he didn't get convicted. I know that. I fully understand he didn't get convicted. But the reason he left within hours is because the House was going to get him. The House was going to do a Santos, all right?
Yeah.
He was going to get expelled, leave or get expelled. And then it would have mounted to where they could have turned it over to the justice, or it had been such a public entity. Now, the only way it's going to come out publicly is if it leaks. So I think, Rick, Gates doesn't actually make it in the official process. I think RFK does. I think RFK is going to be the big test. Can Trump get him through? He'll have hearings. If he doesn't make it, then the Senate has to have mercy on all the rest of the Trump appointments, the Republicans. But if he makes it, it's a big deal. And then I know he's not a Kennedy that's liked. I fully understand. I get it. I know that. The Kennedy family endorsed Biden. But you know what? He's still a Kennedy. And I just wonder, are there a couple of Democrats that, I don't know. I'd rely on you for that answer.
There better not be.
Okay. You never know.
Let's go with that. You never know, but there better not be. Because, look, this is a guy who, in my story with him is, when my oldest was born, back in 2002, he was on the anti-vax kick back then, that mm-hmm. all the vaccines for children had Tamiflu in it, and they were causing mm-hmm. autism, and just all of this hysteria at the mm-hmm. time. And, fortunately, we had a really good relationship with our pediatrician, and they were saying, she explained it to us, but I know mm-hmm. people who didn't vaccinate their kids because mm-hmm. RFK said not to. And you got to wonder, right. How much of that over the years and how much of that down the road is going to harm them.
Yeah.
And for no reason, because it all turned out to be total BS.
Right.
But it is what it is. Bob, as always, appreciate the time, man.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Bob Nay. Want to hear your thoughts. Are you ready for the fun and the entertainment? Email me, Rick at RickSmithShow.com. Back after this.
I'm Rick Smith.
And this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that federal agents stormed the offices of the Industrial Workers of the World in New York City. They were looking for evidence connecting the organization to radical communists or anarchists. The ransacked office was part of the infamous Palmer Raids. When Attorney General Alexander Palmer responded to the growing Red Scare hysteria by raiding the offices of leftist organizations and arresting thousands. Hundreds of immigrants to the United States were deported during the raids without legal due process. The 1917 Russian Revolution had stoked fears about a spreading communist threat. Newspaper headlines helped to drum up public panic. A week before the IWW raid, a headline on the front page of the Evening World, published in New York City, declared, "Reds in U.S. plotted revolution. Deportation for all radicals." The day after the IWW raid, a Washington Post headline read, "Law to crush Reds." Writing in 1920, Attorney General Palmer warned, quote, "The chief appeal communism makes is to the worker. If they can lure the wage earner to join their own gang of thieves, if they can show him that he will be rich if he steals, so far they have succeeded in betraying him to their own criminal course." Palmer went on to describe how communists had, quote, "stirred discontent, caused irritating strikes, and infected our social ideas with the disease of their own minds and their unclean morals." Palmer's references to workers and irritating strikes demonstrate that he perceived the labor movement as part of the communist threat. Anti-communist hysteria took its toll on the most radical elements of the U.S. labor movement, especially the IWW.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I gotta tell you, I wish RFK Jr. weren't such a kook. I mean, to be honest, because there are some things that I think, there are issues, and again, this is the blind squirrel finding a nut. There are some things that I think need to be done. I do think we need someone to take on Big Pharma. I do think we need to take on some of the bureaucracy and getting, you know, things approved and looked at. I think there are things, true things that need to be done. But I don't know that RFK Jr. is the guy. It's going to be interesting to see the confirmation process again, because here's a guy who, from what I understand, had some issues, had some drug addiction issues at some point. And maybe, look, this could be an opportunity to talk about addiction and talk about how we solve that problem as a society and give people an opportunity to beat that. But a lot of kooky stuff there. I mean, to be honest, a lot of kooky stuff. The story about the dead worm, you know, the brain worm, kind of weird. The story about the bear. I mean, who does that? You know, again, just kind of weird stuff. But like I said, at the end of the day, someone, we need to, as a society, to take on Big Pharma in a number of ways. And I hope that we can do that without him. Now, it will be interesting to see, as Bob said, because RFK comes from a dynasty family, a legacy family, will there be Democrats who sign on? Will there be Democrats who say, we do need to take on Big Pharma? Or will this be where lobbyist money really comes? This could be an interesting fight. And while, again, I point out the kookery, this could be one of those interesting Washington, you know, throw down the gauntlet kind of fights that could pit the big money against, you know, people who want to see some change in pharma. So, again, as I said, I think he's a little kooky, but it will be interesting to see how this plays out. And I'll tell you, I am surprised, as I said to Bob, I am surprised that Trump not named him. I really thought that this was going to be one of those, we thought better of that. Now, National Institute of Health, he has said he wants to fire everybody, all 600 people, and replace them. And I go, replace them with who? That, again, questions I have. What kind of overhaul are we talking about? What kind of changes? And this is where you start getting into, well, I agree with some things, but I think he can go a bit too far. And I think he's one of those guys. Going to be interesting. Like I said, the fun, the entertainment of this administration, if nothing else, while Rome burns, we will get our bread and circus. We will get the entertainment. And understand, as we watch this stuff happen, and as it happens to people we know, stay aware of where it's coming from. Because there will be pain, there will be suffering, there will be struggle. It's our job to pay attention. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick. At Rick at The Rick Smith Show.
Soaring high above lacrosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX Lacrosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.